Scott in the 1st District could put him on his way of becoming the only black Republican in Congress. Elsewhere, Democrats are choosing a Senate nominee in North Carolina between Secretary of State Elaine Marshall and Iraq War veteran Cal Cunningham. And in Utah, where Republican Senator Bob Bennett failed to qualify for the primary, the GOP contest is between attorney and Tea Party favorite Mike Lee and businessman Tim Bridgewater. Ken Rudin, NPR News, Washington.
At the World Cup soccer tournament, France trails host country South Africa 2-0 at the half. There's been no let-up to dissension on the French team. The captain of the squad is refusing to play today. In the other game now underway, Uruguay leads Mexico 1-0. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from Rodney G. Peacock, presenting Noontide Festival Month, June 18th through July 11th at Bollinger Auditorium, with music, poetry, and drama, highlighted by a concert by Rodney George Peacock and with his original drama, The Noontide Trilogy, July 2nd through the 11th. Information under events at bollinger.illinois.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're glad that you're listening. And we're also happy to have back on the show again Rick Hartch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. For a number of years now, on a fairly regular basis, he's been here on the program to answer car questions. And the idea is if you're having a problem, if you call and tell us about the car, the make and the model, and give us the best description, he'll see if he can suggest something to try, see if you could solve the problem. And we'll also talk generally about maintenance issues, something we try to do here throughout the year. And they tend to be a little bit different depending on what time of the year it is and whether it's hot or cold. So we'll talk about that. But mainly, we're here to try to answer questions. And you can call in very easily. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free if you would be making a long distance call. Use that. That's 800-222-9455. And you also can send along your questions by email. So you can write to will-talk@illinois.edu at any point. Questions are welcome. Thanks very much for being here.
Well, once again, glad to be here.
We've actually had some pretty warm temperatures already. Certainly, we're headed into the warmest time of the year. Are there some basic things that you should that people should be thinking about in terms of maintenance that are particular to when it's hot?
Well, cooling system is important. Making reference to the radiator, cooling fans. A lot of cars have temperature gauges, and typically they'll run halfway. If you have an instance where things are overheating, you definitely need to get someone to take a look at it as soon as possible. A lot of the electric fans will come on automatically, and if you're not sure about the fans as far as their operation, if you simply monitor the gauge when it gets about halfway, typically the fans should come on. They should also come on when you have the air conditioning on. And coolant is a maintenance item depending on what type of coolant is in the car. May be required replacement every 5 years. Believe it or not, batteries are more prone to fail in the summer than they are in the winter. Hmm. So battery age, we usually suggest 5 years. If the battery's 5 years old, you should just replace it. They can be load tested. You put a device that puts a load on the battery and monitor the voltage at which it drops down to, and that can help determine need of replacement as well. Air conditioning seems to be a big issue the last couple of weeks. As far as checking the air conditioner, you can check it yourself with a thermometer. You just put it in the center dash, maximum air conditioning on recirculation. Typically, at idle, you should see somewhere around 50 degrees. Some cars won't quite get there. They may take a little bit longer. Another indication of air conditioning, the Freon, which is the gas that's in the air conditioning system if it's low, is you'll hear the compressor cycling too much. You'll hear, particularly if you're sitting at an idle and you have the window down, you'll hear a click noise. And each time you hear a click is when the compressor is engaging, and then it'll click and it'll disengage. And you can tell by the idle speed as well. When the compressor disengages, the idle speed will pick up slightly.
Yeah.
If it's cycling too much and not cooling very well, typically when they're low on Freon, they don't cool well at idle, but they'll do better while you're driving down the road. And that's a pretty good indication of it being low on Freon.
Is that something that just you can expect that over time it's going to lose, or should it pretty much hold its charge?
It should hold its charge.
Okay.
Yes, and leaks sometimes are very difficult to find. There's lots of ways to go about it. You charge a system, you can put a dye in there, and it's yellow in appearance, and then when you go over it with a black light, a UV light, it's pretty easy to see. Use electronic leak detectors to monitor that. And some of the leaks are very hard to find. And sometimes what you have to do is put the dye in and ask the customer to come back in a week and then go over it with the black light. Mm. And air conditioning can be quite expensive to repair, particularly if there's problems within the dash. The little unit that kind of looks like a small radiator, which is called the evaporator. And that's where the hot air comes across it. It's cool itself. And then, of course, as it passes through the evaporator, it drops temperature, and then you get the cooling effect out the vents. And you should always see water dripping from under the car. And typically, it's over by the passenger side. So when you pull in the garage, you should always see water dripping. If you don't see water dripping and the air conditioning is working fine, you're probably going to have a mildew odor inside the car, which means the evaporator drain is plugged up.
Mm-hmm. So that's the condensate, and that's the same thing you see in air conditioner. It's got it's got water dripping off.
That's right, due to the heat transfer.
So you just have to make sure that it drains out the way that it should. So that doesn't, if you see, sometimes I think people see if they see some liquid on the ground under the car, they're going to think, well, I got a problem. Well,
it's water.
It could be water, and it could be from the AC.
Right. Yeah. And if the drain is plugged up, as I mentioned, you'll have a mildew odor. The other thing you might notice when you go around corners is you'll hear water sloshing from side to side because it can't get out. And then if enough water gets in there, it'll actually spit like a mist out the vents. So those are all things that can happen.
Okay. Well, we got a caller here. Others, if you have questions, you can call in. Talk with Rick, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. Got a caller here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I have an 03 Toyota Highlander. From the front end, it sounds like tire noise, but when I turn the steering wheel even just slightly to the right, the sound goes away. I'm not sure if it gets maybe a little bit worse turning to the left. Wonder what that might be.
It's the right front wheel bearing.
Right front wheel bearing. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the reason when you have a wheel bearing that's noisy, and usually they become noisy around 35 miles an hour, some become noisier sooner, but when you load a bad wheel bearing, it gets louder. So since you're turning to the right, you're transferring the weight from the right front to the left front.
Yes.
And that's why the noise goes away. So if you
I see.
So if you turn left, it would get louder.
Okay. How long do wheel bearings typically last?
Well, they're a non-serviceable component. So I don't know that they're – I mean, I suspect on an 03, you're probably in the 80,000, 90,000-mile range.
That's right, 90,000.
Right. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's normal, but – there really isn't a pattern to it.
Okay.
It's just...
All right. Very good. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
You're
thank
welcome.
Thank you. Let's go on to Streeter. Another call here, line four. Hello.
Yes, I have a 2003 Dodge Dakota, and last Monday I got off of work and went to the car to start it. It was absolutely dead. I had all functions, like electrical functions such as lights, and air conditioner, etc. Then finally, after jiggling the ignition key and playing around with it, it finally started again. It ran for about 3 days, and this happened again. I took it to the garage. They could find nothing wrong with it. They then finally they got it to the situation where it would not start for them. Did some testing on it, and they said that it was an ignition key, or ignition switch, excuse me. They replaced the ignition switch. I drove it and started and stopped it probably a dozen times the following day, and then the same thing happened again. And then it, the following day, it would start again. And so far, it's been starting fine. But there's something there that this thing could not start at any given time. And do you have any ideas at all what the heck might be going on?
Well, when you turn the key on, you mentioned all the lights come on. Do you hear a click or anything occur?
No, nothing abnormal, nothing that is different than when it was working perfectly.
Okay. My first reaction is it's not fully in park. Next time you try to start the car, if you put your right hand on the key when it doesn't start and then hold it in that position and grab the shift lever and lift it up toward the left and see if okay. it'll start. And then while you're still in that same position with your foot on the brake pedal, move the shift lever to neutral.
Okay.
And see if it starts. And the reason you want to keep the key in the crank position is you want to eliminate the ignition switch, the electrical portion of the ignition switch, which has already been replaced. So if you keep the key in the crank position the whole time you're doing that, you haven't changed that variable, meaning the electrical part of the ignition switch. Then all you're doing is you're checking the park neutral switch. That's what it sounds like. I mean, it could be a starter, but that's my first reaction is it's a park neutral. Just truck around 100,000 miles?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Almost exactly.
Yeah. So that would be my number one candidate to look at.
Okay. I'll try that then.
All right. Okay. Very good.
All right, thank you.
We're talking this morning about cars, something we do periodically on the show, and Rick Karch is the guest from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's been with us before to do the show, and if you got a problem, call in and tell us about it. Tell us what kind of car it is and give us the best description, and he'll tell you what to look at, and maybe you have other kinds of more general questions about maintenance. We can talk about that, too. 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Next is someone in Urbana. Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a 99 Camry, and I'm having trouble getting it to start. A little like what the other fellow described. I'll turn the switch, and it starts slowly. It'll turn over several times where it normally would snap right off. Or occasionally, nothing happens. And then I'll turn the key back and start again, and it will start.
Is it a four-cylinder?
Yes.
It's the starter.
It's the starter, okay.
Yeah, the starter has... It's called a gear reduction starter. It's kind of a funny design for the solenoid, and they use a plunger. And the plunger is a little bit bigger than a quarter in diameter. And as the plunger is pulled down electrically when you energize the key, it makes the contact 180 degrees from one another. And little L-shaped copper-looking contacts.
Yes.
And what happens is it erodes away on one side so that when this disc comes down and that plate tries to contact those two 90-degree electrical contacts, sometimes it doesn't do it right. So it's high resistance. So what happens usually is if the first time the car doesn't start, you just keep trying and trying and trying, and eventually you'll overcome that resistance and the starter will energize.
It sounds exactly like what it's doing.
Okay. So it needs a new starter.
Yeah. It's probably the entire starter or not just the solenoid?
Years and years ago, I used to rebuild them, and anymore, I just replace them.
Yeah.
How old's the battery?
It has a new battery.
Okay. All right. So you're fine.
Okay. So, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. Very good. On to another caller. This is somebody in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That is me.
Yes, sir.
All right. I have a 97 Camry Toyota, and within the last couple or 3 months, there has been an unusual sound from the rear end when I first started up, and I'm backing out of the driveway real slowly, being careful of the traffic, so that's why I'm so slow. And there's a kind of a rumble sound from the rear end. And I've been thinking it might be a bearing, or it might be a differential, or it could be a suspension. But I've had it with in the hands of at least one serviceman, and he took it for a road test, and he could not find anything wrong. But it still does it. And I'm actually afraid to go out on the highway with it because of that problem, of that sound.
When does the sound occur? Is it when you step on the brake pedal?
No, when I'm backing out of my driveway real slow. Well, I would have my foot, I guess, touching the brake pedal,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, you might see. You don't drive every day.
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay, and you only hear this first thing in the morning?
That's right.
Okay. And number one thing to try is to back up slowly, as you mentioned, but without applying the brake pedal. And then once you touch the brake pedal, if you hear the noise, it's what's referred to as rust or brake dust that's in the, assuming this one has rear brake drums and shoes, and if that's the case, they need to remove the brake drums and clean all the dust out of there and lubricate the backing plates. The backing plate is what the shoes slide on.
Yes.
And that should take care of it. As far as it being a differential, no, there isn't. The differential and everything is up front. It's a front-wheel drive car.
So no, I think it's back-wheel.
Camry is front-wheel drive.
Front-wheel, okay,
yes,
okay.
Yes. So it wouldn't be that, and it wouldn't be anything to do with the suspension, because the suspension is only going to make noises in movement, vertical movement, like when you hit bumps.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that's a good thing to be observing, and I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. And again, we got some other callers here. The number, if you'd like to call in, Talk with Rick, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anyway that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And on again. And our next caller is also in Champaign, line number two. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yes.
I just have a comment regarding the previous call about rebuilding starters. I'm sure Mr. Karch is aware of us. We are a shop here in Champaign. We've been here for 31 years. And our specialty is rebuilding starters and alternators from lawnmower to the locomotive of any size, of any shape and form, of any power rating. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, rebuilding a starter still is possible. It's still a viable business, and we're doing it every single day. Just want to let you know.
Well, thanks
right.
for calling.
Very well. I wanted to ask you just a general question about parts, not necessarily about rebuilding, but if, you needed a replacement part, I suppose you could go to a dealership, or you could buy a brand name part that comes from the manufacturer of your car, Volkswagen, Toyota, Ford, whatever. But I'm sure then you could also go to some place where they sell auto parts, and you could get the equivalent thing. It just wouldn't have Volkswagen or Toyota or Ford on it. Are those parts truly equivalent, you think?
Well, it depends on the manufacturer. For example, the import line with regards to starters and alternators, a lot of them use a company called Robert Bosch, and that's what they use originally. So if you go to a parts store, you can order a Robert Bosch part. a lot of the aftermarket parts, from a warranty standpoint, sometimes provide a better warranty.
Hmm.
Some will actually be lifetime as opposed to 12 months or 12,000 miles or 2 years, whatever the case may be. So in some cases, yeah, you can get a better warranty.
But in terms of their functional equivalent, they ought to be just – they ought to work just as well?
Well, some do and some don't. I'd rather not go into that. But if you stay with the name brand, you should be fine, yes.
Okay.
And the warranty, just inquire about the warranty when you purchase the part.
Okay. I've got some weather information I'd like to pass on here, and then we'll get some other callers. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a flash flood warning for Macon County in central Illinois. That will be in effect until 4:30 this afternoon. At 10:21 this morning, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated a slow-moving thunderstorm with very heavy rain across the warned area. Thunderstorms are producing rainfall rates of 1 to 2 inches, and they are moving through the area. Runoff from this excessive rainfall will cause flash flooding to occur, and some locations that will experience flooding include Decatur, Argenta, Forsyth, Harristown, Long Creek, Moroa, Mount Zion, Niantic, Oriana, and Warrensburg. Excessive runoff from heavy rainfall can cause and will cause flooding of small creeks and streams, urban areas, highways, streets, and underpasses, as well as other drainage areas and low-lying spots. So once again, we're talking about a flash flood warning. This is for Macon County, and it will be in effect until 4:30 this afternoon. I think we're expecting the possibility of some more severe weather with severe thunderstorms and the possibilities of some of these storms dumping heavy rain across the region. We will keep you informed of what's going on in the weather. If there are watches or warnings, we'll definitely let you know. Well, we will continue here talking with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. We're getting close to the midpoint of this first hour. He's here occasionally on the show. We talk about car care, and if you have a problem, he can give you some advice. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu, and let's talk with someone in Aurora next, line four. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
My question is in regards to, I have a mustiness from my air conditioner and in my pickup, and I have sprayed some Lysol in there from time to time, right, you know, before I shut it off, but that seems to be just a short-term fix. I was wondering if you had any recommendations.
Well, when the let's just start with the truck. When the truck is idling, and, for example, when you pull in the garage after you've used the air conditioning, or maybe you don't use a garage, but wherever you park, look under the vehicle over by the passenger side, just inside the tire area. There should be water dripping.
There is water dripping, yes.
Does it seem like when you go around corners, do you hear any kind of water movement?
No, I do not.
Okay. As far as the dripping is concerned, does it seem like on a high humid day there's quite a bit of water or just a few little drips?
I guess I'm not very observant, because that I really can't give you an honest answer.
Okay. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that the moisture that accumulates in the evaporator housing and goes out the drain, mm-hmm. it may not all be getting out the drain. It may be restricted. So you might have someone check that evaporator drain for you.
Hey, well, and if I find it, actually, on one of my older cars, I remember I stuck a Q-tip or something up in there one time. It should be easy to find that, shouldn't it?
Yeah, once you see where the drip is, then you... particularly with your truck, you could just crawl under there.
Right.
And you could use like a coat hanger, just something to push up through there.
Because you think that's what the problem is that it's there's water that's staying in there. It's not necessarily mold or something growing in there. No.
Well, if it stays there long enough, there will. You don't have any water leaks, like the windshield's not leaking or the floor mats aren't wet.
Nope.
The carpet's not wet.
No.
Okay. Then I would say it's probably from the air conditioning, from the moisture.
Right, because that's the only time you notice is when I turn on the air conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's probably what I would look at is that drain.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. I'm going over to Indiana for a caller here, line one. Hello.
Hello. Just a quick comment on those Furby starters. I go to a mechanic, probably much like you, a reputable fellow, and he's gone through three starters in a very short period for me. No problem. He says, well, they didn't make it right. They messed up. Here's the new one. So those people are out there that will take care of that kind of situation. My question deals with something, luckily it didn't happen, but I started thinking I ought to know to do what to do if it does happen. During this torrential rains we're having, had to go down on a regular street, and the ponding was so much, the water was all kept inside the hood and everything. I started losing cylinders, and I just made it home, just chugged in, you know, and it died on me. And I was concerned. I thought in the morning I would have to do a lot of wiping and stuff. Luckily, things dried off. But if they hadn't dried off, I'm from way back school when they had distributors and stuff. I mean, we just wiped down wires in the socket area, and boom, boom, we were ready to go. Are there other things under the new kind of cars, hood area in there where the plugs are and all that and the wiring and stuff, that one should make sure are dry before it tries to restart an engine after it's been shut down by the water?
Well, first of all, in terms of plug wires, not all cars have that anymore.
Yeah.
They all have coil on plug. But if you have spark plug wire or distributor cap or ignition coil wire issues, you will have running problems when it rains or in high humid environments.
Okay.
But what you're describing is the engine actually taking in water.
Okay.
So it gets in through the air cleaner inlet, it gets to pass the air filter, and then into the engine. Now, fortunately, you didn't get enough water in there. If you had gotten enough water in there and it gets into the cylinder, as the intake valve opens, the water goes in. Well, water is not compressible.
Yeah.
So as the piston comes back up on compression, it hydrolocks.
Yeah.
And it'll actually stop the engine, number one.
Yeah.
And then depending upon the speed at which the engine was running, it may bend something or create a hole.
Okay.
So what I would do on your vehicle is probably take the air cleaner out and dry it out and get that water out of there. I don't know how long ago this occurred.
Just 2 days ago.
Okay. It's probably still got water in there.
Okay.
So I would take the air filter out and lay it out in the sun, and then you should be fine after that.
Okay.
But, people need to realize that just because you go slow doesn't always mean you should.
Number one,
you shouldn't drive through it.
Because, I know.
You know, to put an engine in these cars anymore is very expensive.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking about that as I was driving, but, it was pretty late at night and dark and the road I haven't been on. And
hard to see.
I just made it, So I'll take care of that.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Oh, you were fortunate.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. That's what, and also whenever we talk about the dangers of flooding. Actually, this is sort of quite apart from the damage to your car, but a lot of people get killed because they try to drive across a flooded road and end up getting their car swiped away. So mm-hmm. the general advice is for safety, for the good of the car, for good of you. If you come up to a place like that, and you can, you turn around and go the other way. Don't try to drive through.
You don't know how deep it is, and it may be okay for a little while, and then all of a sudden it may get significantly deeper, or more water may come into there. So
All right. We've got several of the callers here. We'll keep on, and next, talk with somebody in Danville. That's line 3 right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have an ignition key problem, and it is me, not the ignition key. I have severe arthritis in my right thumb, and it's almost impossible to turn the ignition key. I'm wondering, do they make some sort of an extension? I've thought of, trying to use a vice grip or something, but what has this ever come up before?
Well, the first thing that I would do is maybe just go to a locksmith and see if they have something that they can slide over. What kind of car is it?
It's a Ford minivan.
Okay, does...
I mean, this,
like a Windstar or Aeros?
Yes, it's a Windstar.
Windstar. I think on the Windstar, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you put the key in the black part of it,
yeah,
it goes into a housing, and then there's, you rotate the housing as opposed to the key?
Right. It's the pressure on my right thumb in trying to rotate the key that makes it...
difficult.
I mean, this, yeah, I mean, this is a sporadic occurrence, mm-hmm. arthritis, but it's occurring right now.
Right.
And I haven't driven for over 10 days now because it would just be not very easy to turn the key.
But you can turn it initially to the on position easily. It's just when you have,
yes,
to rotate against that spring,
right,
is when you have trouble.
Right.
Okay. Well, you might go to a locksmith and see if they can add something to the key, make it more of like a T looking.
Yeah, the key is pretty long. I mean, it's,
right,
the longest of any car key I've ever had.
Right.
But,
and then if that doesn't work, then the other idea would be to go to some shop and have them put a remote button on the dash for you.
Oh.
So that you would turn the key to the on position and then push the button with, say, your left hand or whatever's,
uh-huh,
easy for you.
Yeah.
So they could mount it on the left side or the right side.
Okay.
And then you just have to push a button.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
I just had no idea where to look, whether there was any automotive catalog. I mean, surely other people have this problem.
Well, you're probably
people
correct.
People don't even have a thumb.
So that would be my suggestion. Try the locksmith first and see if that device, if they can come up with something for you, would be helpful. And then if that doesn't work, then I would probably put a button in.
All right, then. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, the lines look like the lines are all free. And if you have a question for us, our guest in this part of Focus is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Occasionally here, different times of the year, he's here and we talk about car care and try to at least have some in the summertime and some in the wintertime because the questions and the problems are maybe a little bit different. There are some maintenance things that you want to pay attention to all year round, though. And if you have questions about maintenance or you have a specific problem, something that has to do with your car, call in and tell us about it. And he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Just, I want to go back to something just for a second. Right at the beginning, we're talking about general things to pay attention to at this time of year, particularly when it's warm. And you said that, and certainly overheating of the engine can be an issue. On the dashboard, there is going to be some kind of gauge that's going to show you that the temperature of the engine. I'm not sure everybody realizes that's what that is, and generally it's just a little needle that's going to go up or down, and on one end it'll be cold, on the other end it'll be hot, and when you first start the car, it's probably going to be pretty much down on the cold end, and then as you drive around and the engine gets warmer, very slowly that needle's going to go up. The place where you want that to be, when it's at operating temperature and everything's pretty much okay after you've been driving around for a while, it's pretty much around in the middle?
Correct.
Okay.
Halfway.
And if it spends a lot of time up more than halfway on the hot end, you should be concerned about that?
Yes. Let's just use that as an example. As I mentioned earlier, not all cars have a temperature gauge. But let's say your car has a temperature gauge, and it does exactly what you say. It goes past halfway. Let's say it goes to 3/4. And then you look at it at the stoplight, and you go, okay, it should be halfway. And then you start going down the road, and all of a sudden you can literally watch the needle move back toward the halfway point. That means it's low on coolant. Another good indication of a car that's low on coolant is in the winter, you have the heat on, and you're sitting at a stoplight, and it's like, boy, the heater's really not working very well. And then you start moving and it starts working good again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing. It's low on coolant. So that's a good indicator of low on coolant. One other thing about the cooling system, if you decide to check the coolant level in your vehicle, never ever do it when it's hot. You only want to do it first thing in the morning when it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
There's pressure in there, 14 to 16 PSI, and the coolant temperature, the coolant and the water mixture, and most cars operates at 220 degrees.
So you don't want that to come shooting out at you when you take the
thing. So you never want to remove a cap from the cooling system when the engine's warm. Only do it first thing in the morning.
Okay. Very good. Well, we got some other callers here, or another caller here in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
It's the question of a used car that had reflective plastic film on the inside of the windows, and then I took it off, and now I can't get the stickum off. And I was just wondering if I've tried soap and water, and I've tried glass cleaner. I've been looking at it. It looks like it's made out of alcohol mostly.
Yeah, that won't. What you're trying to remove is the glue.
Uh-huh.
So is it, like, real significant, or is it just a film that kind of moves around when you try to clean it?
It doesn't move when I try to clean it.
Okay, but is it significant?
Well, I can see through it, and I can see where the creases in the plastic were. I mean, it doesn't obscure vision, but it's unsightly.
Yes.
I mean, it offends my...
Right. There's a product, I can't remember, was it Goof Off? Does that sound familiar?
Goo Gone or something.
Something like that. It's to break down petroleum-type products.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Yeah. I think I might even have some of that. I hadn't thought of that yet.
Yeah.
Great. I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. On again, and certainly, again, we have plenty of time for other questions. Someone wants to call in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and, of course, your email is will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a question, and this is interesting because I know that this has come in by email, and I know that at least one time somebody that I know said that for those people— You know, sometimes you see people who have these really heavy keychains, and they have a ton of keys on them, all kinds of stuff hanging on there. And they have their ignition key on there, and so they have that plugged into the car. And I have heard it said that all that weight on the ignition mechanism is not a good thing.
Yeah, the lock cylinders, they're very soft material. So, yes, that will wear it, and then what you find is when you put the key in and you turn it, it doesn't turn. But if you lift the key up a little bit because of all the weight that you had below it, then it turns fine. And, yes, that's definitely not a good idea.
Okay, so that would probably be good just to have your ignition key just be that.
Well,
all your other keys are, you know, keep hold down on the,
right.
on the weight.
I mean, three or four keys is fine with the remote. You get it more than that, and it will eventually create a problem.
All right.
You're correct.
Then we'll go on to a caller. Well, at least I thought so. Let me, though, give you some other weather information here because there are some booming storms moving through the central part of the state here, and we just want to let you know. There is a severe thunderstorm watch that will now be in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon for a number of places in our severe coverage area, and they include both Coles and Moultrie County. So, again, that's a severe thunderstorm watch in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon, and that includes Coles and Moultrie counties in our severe weather coverage area. And that's sort of in addition, maybe I mentioned one more time, that's in addition to a flash flood warning that was put out by the Weather Service a little bit earlier. This is for Macon County in central Illinois. That will be in effect until 4:30 this afternoon. So, again, we're expecting possibility of severe storms moving through the area this morning, this afternoon, possibility of those dropping some pretty serious amounts of rain, possibility of flooding, certainly. So you want to keep aware of what's going on with the weather, and we'll do our best to keep you on top of it. So keep it tuned here. And car care questions are welcome, too. Rick Karch is here. And if you've got a problem, call and tell us about it, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455, and then we have email as well, will-talk@illinois.edu. And we are, I'm told, having some lightning issues out there right now, and that does, in fact, affect our AM transmission. So if you can, you could switch over to the HD, or if not, you'll just have to hang in and wait for it to pass. Anything else that we sort of did some of the general list of maintenance for when it's warm? I'll ask you to talk about tires. That's one of those things that's really important no matter when. It's a safety issue. It affects the mileage. That's something that you really need to pay attention to.
Tire pressure. Yes. Tire pressure is typically found when you open the driver's door. There should be a little sticker there. It'll give you front and rear tire pressures, and in most cases they are different, front to rear. It'll also tell you what the correct size tires are supposed to be on the car. Mm-hmm. If you don't see it there, sometimes it's in the gas cap door or in the owner's manual, of course. Speaking of the owner's manual, it's a good idea to open that every once in a while and look in the maintenance section. Maintenance is broken down in terms of mileage and time. And you need to follow that schedule. Just changing the oil in the oil filter isn't enough. There's other things that are important. There's fluids in the vehicle that have a life expectancy. Brake fluid is one that's very often overlooked. Most manufacturers recommend replacing it every 2 years. It's hydroscopic, which means it absorbs moisture, and it is a safety issue. Brake system problems. If you're driving on the highway and you come up to an exit ramp, and as soon as you touch the brake pedal, you get a little bit of vibration in the steering wheel, or you may even feel it in your foot, and then the harder you apply, the harder it becomes, or the more violent it become. That's an indication that the brake rotors need to be replaced or machined if they're thick enough. What the rotors are, they rotate with the wheel, and the brake pads squeeze against the brake rotor when you step on the brake pedal by hydraulic pressure. So what you're feeling is that rotors, like, for example, a simple description would be it's wobbling. And as it wobbles, it pushes the pads back and lets the pads retract, and that's, of course, what you feel in the brake pedal is the pedal's going down, up, down, up, down. That's brake pedal pulsation. And it on some cars, it can get pretty violent. Some it's pretty slight, but as I mentioned, that's brake rotors. We talked about batteries a little bit, 5 years. If at that point, we usually just recommend replacing them before you have a problem. But normal maintenance schedule is important. A lot of the cars today have timing belts, and the timing belt interval is a maintenance interval. And it's, again, mileage and time. It's a rubber belt that's reinforced, and it definitely needs to be replaced. On some of the engines, if the timing belt breaks, it'll bend valves, in other words, internal engine damage. The timing belt connects the crankshaft. The crankshaft is what moves the pistons up and down to the camshaft, and the camshaft is what opens and closes the valves. And the relationship between the camshaft and the crankshaft is important. If it gets out of sync or out of time, the piston may be coming up while a valve is opening. And that's referred to as an interference engine, and they collide. Mm-hmm. And the valve usually bends, and then cylinder heads has to be removed, and valves have to be replaced. So timing belt, very important. Transmission service is important as well. The cost of transmissions today, some of them are more troublesome than others, and those that are more troublesome, the manufacturer has actually stepped up the servicing intervals. Hondas and Acuras is a good example. As far as tires are concerned, you can look at tires. You can measure the tire tread depth. If you're unsure how to do that, if you just go to a tire store, they'll be more than happy to check that for you. When you look at the sidewall of the tire, you shouldn't see any cracks, which would indicate that the rubber is old and splitting. Mm-hmm. Tire pressures, when you check tire pressures, you want to check that when the tires are cold. As you drive the vehicle, there's friction between the tire and the road surface, and that friction, of course, creates heat, and that escalates the tire pressure.
Okay. Questions? Welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-9455. 888-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Apparently somebody was listening to the earlier question about the dealing with the sticky stuff on windshield and did say, for what it's worth, they said goo gone and goof off are two different things.
Okay.
it's not the same thing. But I'm sure that I've used one or the other of those things for to take off a...
I think it's goof off.
Sticker in the inside and whatever the stuff that I used, it actually did work. So if you get the right stuff, you'll be okay. In any case, you give us a call too if you got questions, and we'll be here for about another maybe 5 or 6 minutes. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Also, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Oh, I was just thinking about how, you know, the earlier caller said that she was having some, a caller said she was having some difficulty turning the key to get the car to start. And you said, well, what you actually can do is you could talk with somebody about having a push button put on the car. I think actually there are some cars that they come with that now. I'm not sure why that should necessarily be better. You got something on your keychain that you got to have, or else the car won't start.
Correct.
So you get into the car recognizes, okay, you're supposed to be in here, I will start for you, and then you push the button and the car starts. What's the advantage of a system like that?
Anti-theft.
Oh, okay. It makes it easier. Makes it harder to steal.
Correct.
That's the thing.
Right. Yeah, that's becoming more and more common. You just basically, as long as it's in your pocket.
You have to make sure you got that thing with you, of course, if you want to drive the car. But other than that,
yeah. And then I remember when they first came out with the, you'd start the car, and we used to have, years and years ago, of course, you could shift out of park without stepping on the brake pedal. And when they first came out with, you have to step on the brake pedal.
Mm-hmm.
We used to get a lot of people have problems remembering that and getting used to that. But it's pretty common now, and it's a safety issue.
Yeah. People who would call up and say, the car won't start.
I can't get the car to start out of park. And, well, you have to always be stepping on the brake pedal. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that happens with some of these cars, too, is you are stepping on the brake pedal, but you can't get it out of park.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, when that happens, it means you also don't have brake lights. So, because when you step on the brake pedal, the brake lights are supposed to come on, and then electrically it also energizes a solenoid, which runs a cable, or it may be just a solenoid in the shift lever in the center console to retract a pin from the mechanical mechanism so you can get it out of park.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. And let's see. Somebody in Muhammad will be next. Line number one right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have a Honda Odyssey, and the air conditioner isn't working as well. It's a 2001 Odyssey, and we're wondering, is that something we can recharge the air conditioner from home, or is that something that we need to take it into the dealer, or could any mechanic do that?
Well, anyone that does air conditioning work can do that. And with these new systems anymore, what seems to work the best is you evacuate from all the Freon out of the system, and you measure how much you remove. And then you can compare that to what the capacity of the system is. Let's say in yours it's 2.5 pounds. I don't know if it has the rear air conditioning or not.
It does.
Okay. So if it's in your case, does it seem to you that at idle it doesn't cool very well, but when you're going down the highway it's better?
No, it seems uniformly. It's just, used to be we'd get ice cold air coming out. Now it's still cold, but it's just not as cold as it used to be.
Okay.
And coming into the summer, we kind of wanted to see if we figured maybe given that the van's that old that it needs to be replaced or recharged.
It probably has a leak. It may be a very small leak. But if you take it to someone and they evacuate the system and see how much is in the system, maybe it's only 50%. Then they'll recharge the system with a dye, and they'll also check for the leak with an electronic leak detector.
Uh-huh.
But you are correct. It sounds like that. By chance, does it feel like the heater is still on?
No.
Okay. All righty. Because some of those do have problems with the heater valve, the heater control valve. Mm-hmm. When it's in the full cold position, there's a rubber washer in there, in the valve. And when it's closed, it's not really, it's closed, but it's leaking. So you'll have heat coming out the vents, which, of course, the air conditioning can't overcome. So you might want to...
No, we don't notice that.
Okay. All righty. Well, then you're probably correct. It's just low on Freon.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks. Time certainly for one, maybe two. Folks, if you want to give us a call, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or 9455. You can also send along your comments to will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's somebody else who has an email for us. Should a tire balance work at any speed or just up to 70? The listener says, I go 80 and I get a slight vibration. Should I go back to the dealer?
Yes, if you're getting a vibration. And tire balance related issues you feel in the steering wheel, like, for example, if it's the front tires, it would be something you'd feel in the steering wheel. If it's the rear tires, you'd kind of feel it in the seat. Tire balance is related to harmonics. So in this email, for example, everything's fine until he gets to 80, and then he feels it. Hmm. And I'm sure if he went past 80, it might go away.
Oh, okay.
So that further confirms that it is a tire balance issue. And yes, I would take it back. I don't know if I'd tell him you're going 80, but tell him if they could recheck the tire balance. And if you can isolate it from the front to the rear, that will help them greatly.
All right. Real quick, we'll try to get Champagne. Line one, hello.
Hi, I have a question. We were on our way home on a trip yesterday, and we stopped for gas, and the battery blew up on the car. And I'm just curious what would cause a battery to blow up.
Well, there had to have been a spark.
Okay.
Now, to answer why it blew up, it may also be a situation where a battery normally vents gases to atmosphere. For a battery to blow up, two things have to occur. One, too much gas is being vented, mm-hmm. and a spark. So you may have a problem with the alternator.
Okay.
You should have the alternator checked. Make sure it's not overcharging. Are you going through a lot of light bulbs prior to this?
No, this is the first thing that's ever gone wrong with the car.
Oh, okay.
So it's a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and so I was just curious, you know, if it was, you know, something I had done or...
No, it doesn't have anything to do with what you did, no.
Okay. All right. Well,
all right.
Thank you so
well,
much.
There we got to leave it with our thanks to Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. We're coming up to the end of our fiscal year. That's June 30th. In fact, it's about a week away. Operating costs are increasing. Government funding always uncertain. And right now, we are $213,900 away from our fundraising goal. What you hear on WILO Radio in the coming year depends on reaching it. Your online gift at willpledge.org will help us get there. And we thank you very much.
Support for today's programs comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com.
We're going to break for an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're at mid-session. Wheat and corn are following through on the weakness that those two commodities displayed yesterday, while soybeans is a mixed affair. Let's look at particulars. In Kansas City, July wheat at 495 and a quarter is down 4.5. December, 525.5, down 3. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 458, down 4. December, 502.25, down 5. July corn, 351.5, down 3.5. September, 360.5, down 3.75. December, 370.5, down 4.25. March, 383 down 4.5. July soybeans, 965.5 up 2.25. August, 959.25 up 2.5. November, 937.75 down 1.25. January of 2011, 947.5 down 1.5. Meteorologist Drew Lerner has this in his weather highlights. He says that oppressive heat and humidity today and tomorrow will be the norm, especially from Missouri to Ohio and southward. Extreme high temperatures are to be expected in the upper 90s to around 100 both days, with Missouri and southwestern Illinois the hottest. You're listening to WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. A few more weather highlights from Drew. He says some cooling will occur late this week, with temperatures cooling somewhat Thursday and Friday. Temperatures will be back to a seasonally warm range of 80s and lower 90s. Thunderstorms will continue frequently in northern parts of the Midwest across the area.